and welcome to Unnecessary Gaming, a sometimes daft podcast about all kinds of games. Casual, unscripted chat, apart from this bit obviously, and reviews, sort of. This is a video games episode, and up first, Ewan will be giving us a retrospective of the first two Bioshock games, as experienced by him, on the Switch. And after that, Dave, that's me, will be telling you all about the Shenmue anime, because apparently that's a thing we're doing now. But before all of that, this is episode 131, and did you know EN131 is the European and now British standard for ladder design and manufacture? I know this because I was on the website for the British Ladder Association, and while I was disappointed to find that I'd missed out on LadderCon back in October, I was delighted to discover that they are encouraging readers to get a grip on ladder standards and have a safety initiative called Step Up to Safe Ladders. Now, I was going to use this as an opportunity to talk about my great love of industry trade magazines, about how I used to sit at work and idly flick through copies of Cabling World, about how the internal magazine of the UK seafood industry is called News from the Cod End, and about the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service magazine, which used to have a Hunt the Golden Helmet feature in every issue. I was going to do all of that, but there simply isn't time. On with the episode. Enjoy!
Well, I mean, because I've been making use of my Switch, I can, there's just so many remasters of games. It's kind of like the main thing it does. So I got hold of the Bioshock collection. I've still not played Infinity. Is it Bioshock Infinite?
Infinite,
yeah.
Bioshock Infinity War. Anyway, I played the first two, the Rapture games, and this, the basic setup for that is, I mean, I don't know if you guys have played them. Rapture is this city set up under the sea by some rich industrialist in the, I guess it's meant to be the 1940s, Andrew Ryan. And basically, yeah, it's his sort of vision of this undersea utopia that's unregulated, and there's, you know, getting away from big government. And as you'd expect, it all goes to hell pretty quickly. And your character's just kind of dropped into all this. Basically, it's a sort of first-person shooter horror game with sort of RPG elements. You can upgrade. You get sort of weird abilities. You can set people on fire, shock them with lightning, set traps on the ground, weirdly enough, is an odd thing. Don't really know how... Well, these plasmids or atom thing... It's just a sort of hand-wavy thing for, oh yeah, you can have weird powers, and everyone else is trying to get these weird powers as well, and steal them from these little girls who are sort of escorted around by these lumbering monstrosities that you eventually have to fight, and then you can either save or basically drain the little girls of their atom, which kills them.
So it's cheerful then?
Oh yeah, it's a lovely place. Everything's going swell, as they would say. I mean, the story I found, it's a good story. I knew about, if we're getting into spoilers here, I don't know if you guys know about the storyline of the first Bioshock game.
The big spoiler.
Yeah.
Well, I played this game a long, long, long time ago, the original one, and I remember very little about it other than that I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a good game. I knew about the spoiler going in, so I think for me it was kind of down to how it was going to, you know, the execution of it. And I thought that was really done really well, because you are kind of finding you throughout the game, you're constantly wondering why any of this is actually happening. It's like you're just kind of dumped in this situation. You're some guy, a plane crashes and you swim to some little island and it takes you to some underground city and everything's all fucked up. And this guy on the radio is telling you to go about and do things for him. And yeah, so it does turn out that you're like this... You're like a genetically engineered child who's like implanted with this command to, what is it? Would you kindly? And you do notice the guy's been saying that sort of on the radio, but it's done in this friendly Irish accent, so you don't really think about it. Would you kindly open that door? And you know, you just get on with it and you don't really think about it. So I thought they pulled off, even knowing what the twist was going to be, I found it interesting and it was well done. One of the few times in the game you actually get to meet an actual person face to face that's not one of the splicers that's trying to kill you. The story is also told through, there's like logs you can find around the place, these tape recorders that basically give you a bit more info. It'll just be like a diary from a person. Standard video game storytelling stuff.
That comes from System Shock. You know, the audio logs.
Yeah, I've never played System Shock. It sounds really interesting.
BioShock is the spiritual successor System Shock. It was System Shock that really popularised those, finding those audio logs and being all alone, because that's what makes it so atmospheric. It's like you say, you don't meet other people. The only people you meet are trying to kill you.
Yeah.
And so you feel very isolated, but then you find these little fragments of audio. In System Shock, it's like a ruined spaceship where everybody's dead, basically. And so you find these little audio logs from people who've since passed away. And through that, you kind of piece together what has happened on the spaceship. Similar thing.
Well, while we're talking about audio, I did need to bring up the issues with the sound design in this game. And it's kind of there in the sequel as well, where... and you can adjust, and I would advise anybody playing these games on any system to adjust the volume settings early on, because I found that I missed so much dialogue in the early, because there's just so much noise going on in this game. All the bad guys, you know, the splicers, they're all just constantly like chatting away at themselves in the background, and you can seem to be able to hear them from miles away. And everything's just really, really loud. And I found it was a little bit difficult to kind of follow in the early stage of the game what was actually going on. But I did enjoy the hacking minigame.
Yes.
The old pipe dream. Up to a point. I think a lot of people probably found that it does get a bit tedious after a while. There's like this sort of weird, like, broken difficulty curve with it, because there's only like so many stages of making that game difficult that you can have. And it just gets to a point where every one of them is a cheat, where the pipe's usually, the bit that's already set up is usually pointing back at itself, and then it's surrounded by bits that you can't go to, so you need to somehow know that and then change it, like, straight away. I don't know, it's difficult to describe, but there's a certain thing that they start doing at a certain point, where, and there's difficulty gauges before you take on a hacking challenge, but they come to just be meaningless at a certain point. And you just get sick of doing them.
Does any game have good hacking mini-games?
Well, yeah, I've seen this argument. I mean, I like the idea. I can't help but enjoy, like, in Deus Ex, I kind of liked that. But yeah, again, I got sick of it eventually.
There was a game I've played I remember talking about a while ago on the podcast, where you were actually just a hacker, but the game almost taught you how to code as well. I can't remember what it was called.
There's a few of those. Those are good.
Yeah. You were walking about and you had to, like, literally, like, if you were hacking into something, like a lamppost, for example, to change the light, you could change the light color and stuff by actually just typing in code.
It was called, like, else return or something, else return.
That
or
was
something
it. Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Let me see. There was some Steam library. I will tell you what it was. Else heart dot break. Yeah,
there we go.
That was it.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
Those are
but
good.
Again, like, yeah, but it was fun.
Those are, I wouldn't call those mini games so much though, because it's such a core part of the game. Mm. Like the ones where you have to learn like a little language or whatever and learn to code in of them. It's more like Fallout has its silly hacking thing. The one in Cyberpunk was disappointingly rubbish. You know, you would think for
like
a game
a
where it's
Cyberpunk.
Such a core aspect of the setting, that they would make a bit of an effort, but there's not much to it. Maybe we need to do, like, should we start doing top tens?
Oh, top 10 hacking games.
Top 10.
I hear they're the
hacking mini games.
The path to success.
Yeah.
Do we want a path to success?
We need to put them up on YouTube with a sort of,
I don't feel like we've been on one so far.
Annoyingly chummy intro by each of us.
Hi guys.
And here's my top 10 games with a rabbit in it.
Are you going to do that, Ewan? Please do that.
Well, yeah, I could set something up for
top 10
for
games with a rabbit
episode,
in it.
Maybe. Yeah. I'll have a look. Nothing comes to mind where I've been in a game that I've enjoyed that's had a rabbit in it, or no memorable rabbit moments that I can think of.
Right, let's see.
One of the characters in Overcooked, games. A rabbit, maybe?
Oh, yeah. I think you might be right. I mean,
it just seems like the sort of thing.
That's, well, there you go. There's number one.
Right. Well, yeah, that's got to be number one. Any excuse to make Overcooked number one of a list?
What about
Rayman Raving Rabbids?
Jazz Jack count? Rabbit?
I don't think we're allowed to count rabbits because they're not technically rabbits.
What about Star Fox?
He's a fox, isn't he?
No, but one of the other pilots is a rabbit.
He's a hare.
I'm sorry.
Peppy hare.
We're going to be pedantic about it.
Stop getting Star Fox wrong. you'll be telling me Slippy's a frog next. He's a toad.
So in Bioshock, what did you think of all the powers? Because they were a big part of it, and they made a big deal of, you can electrocute people when they're in water, and, well, that was the big one that we showed.
It's a pretty frequent, there's just always like random pools of water about the place. You go, I see. Although it's not that powerful, I found. Well, this kind of brings me to Bioshock 2. I don't think I've made any secret of it on this podcast. I am not good at first-person shooter games, particularly on consoles, so anything I say about these games has to be taken with an additional pinch of salt, more than you would normally take any of our reviews. But basically, as soon as I put down Bioshock for a bit before I completed it and just randomly start playing Bioshock 2, and I was immediately more engaged with that game than I ever was with the first one. And I think it was just entirely down to the combat. Bioshock 2, you're playing as basically one of the big daddies, the sort of like protector things. There's some weird storyline about you. I haven't really uncovered a lot about it, but I played a fair bit of the game at this point. And yeah, the combat's just so much more. It's just like, I just, this satisfying kind of visceral quality to it, where you've got your drill apparatus that you can just drill people in the face with. All the weapons are kind of like attachments. Instead of a pistol, you've got this like rivet gun, and you can fire trap rivets, and you've got a machine gun, a spear thrower thing. Although there is an equivalent to the spear thrower in the first game. There's the crossbow, which was a thing I was curious about, because this happens in Half-Life as well. And I don't know if this is a first-person shooter convention that pops up anywhere else, but who decided that the crossbow is the most powerful projectile weapon you can have in a first-person shooter game, where you can wield automatic rifles and whatnot, and you can blast somebody with a whole clip from one of those, but a single crossbow bolt through the chest will just knock them down.
Like the hatchets in the Call of Duty. It's like there has to be some stupid weapon that is unlikely to be as powerful as it is. It's interesting what you were saying about the combat, because if I had the one thing that I didn't like about Bioshock 1 was that for all the magic powers that you have, it just felt like too much of a first-person shooter a lot of the time.
Well, this is the thing. Because you're having to constantly swap between the two, and I've gone back, and it's not like a massive amount of time. I found that having played Bioshock 2, I went back and played the first one using the plasmids more, because I'd been really getting to grips with using them in the second one, where you can wield both that and a weapon at the same time. And I just found that I was just creating so many more options in combat, and it was just I was having a lot more fun. There's kind of Bioshock 2's based around a slightly more linear progression than the first one, and it's based around these kind of set pieces on each level, where rather than, but you do still have to kill the big daddies to get the little sisters to get, you'll get one to join you, and then she'll lead you to bodies that she can harvest for Adam, and while she's doing that you have to defend her, and it's kind of like a repeated gameplay loop, and it's quite satisfying to do, because you start thinking about the environment, and there's a lot of trap options. You've got your sort of bolt trap thing, you've got your rivet trap, you've got proximity grenades, you've got a plasmid that allows you to create traps, and you can power those traps with your other plasmids. Like, you can make a fire trap, or you can make an electricity trap. If you upgrade that, you can put it on the walls and roofs so that splicers, who they overuse in the later part of both those games, they're less of a problem. And I just found that so much more satisfying than the first one, where I was just getting killed all the time, I found, in the first one. I rarely died in the second one.
Yeah, maybe I was just playing it wrong. It sounded like a little bit like I just wasn't making use of the stuff as much as I should have been.
No,
just resorting to shooting things because it was like seemed the most straightforward.
I encountered the exact same problem as you in the first one, that I just resorted more to weapons and was just entirely focused on that. Although the one thing I noticed, and this might be another side effect of me just being bad at these kind of games, is that there's weapon upgrade stations throughout both games, and I've found so many more in the second one. In the first one, there's not that many. I found one, and I was like, oh, this must be a thing that pops up again. So I upgraded my pistol, cartridge capacity, and it just had this daft-looking pistol. And I had that for ages, and I never found another one for, ages after that. So they might be in secret areas or whatever, but I think I've found maybe a total of, I don't know, maybe I can think of only two or three in the first game. And I was finding two or three on each level in the second one. But I was also using the plasmids just as much, so I was just getting so much more fun out of the combat. You've also got, essentially your dual wielding, you've got plasmids and guns, and you can also, you've got a melee attack. So you've got your drill, but the drill needs fuel. I did often find myself just using the drill up, having a lot of fun with that, and then forgetting about it for ages because I didn't have any fuel, and then it would fill up and I would just be leaving loads of fuel behind and then going into another fight and just using the drill up all again, forgetting about it. So, but the melee thing comes in with every single weapon, so you can always twat someone in the face with a weapon, and it's really satisfying. They've also introduced to kind of counter your character being this kind of big brawny character in the second one, there's a new splicer type. They've got, are they brawlers or something? There's basically these guys, really back jacked up big guys that'll just run at you and try and hit you. So it's kind of you can get quite involved in a fight with them.
So did you find it atmospheric?
Yeah. Again, with the first one, because just everything, with the sound issues I was having, it's a bit muddier. I don't know if there's a kind of a motion blur on the... It just... The first one's got definitely of it, sets everything up and it's got a good story, but I just had a lot more fun playing the second one, and I thought it looked better. It was probably only made a couple of years after, and they're using a lot of the same assets, but they'd somehow, it just seemed less muddy somehow. Mm. And it just, it looked nicer, but it still just had this it's atmosphere, it's tense. When you've got another thing that happens in the second one, you have, once you've dealt with all of the little sisters on a particular level, once you sort of send off whether you kill or rescue the last one, you get the big sister will come after you, and it's sort of an upgraded version of the big daddies that is really fast, has a lot of weaponry, will just come at you, and you hear it just screaming from somewhere in the level, and you know it's coming for you, and that is really terrifying. Certainly the first few times, once you sort of get used to the pattern, you sort of get yourself set up and just have traps everywhere, and I've dispatched them pretty quickly after that, I think. But when they first appear, they're pretty scary.
I did find the first one quite scary. I mean, I'm not good with scary games anyway, playing it on my own with in the dark sort of thing. And there's a few of those jump scares in BioShock, which always catch me, because they don't do the sort of obvious, well, it's obvious to us now, but it was new to me then, where they do the one where they have someone appear behind you.
Oh.
And they do it a couple of times, and I get caught by it every time.
So, do you know...
They'll give you one time they give you a thing in a corner of a new area that you go into, and there's this shrine or something over in the corner, which is clearly there for you to go over and have a wee look at. And then that triggers... someone to appear behind you, so you look at it and then you turn around and they're standing right in your face, and they always go hello. every time.
I didn't get that often, but I did find you're bringing up another point that I noticed with the first one. I could not make sense of where splicers were coming from. Seemed they were just warping from walls at a certain point. There didn't seem a lot... There's a lot more sense of space in the second one. And instead of the jump scares, there's a lot, I think there's actually a lot more atmospheric stuff in it where, you know, they'll use the lights, they'll quite often have a bit, you know, bits of corridor that have light streaming out from a doorway or a window, and you'll be silhouetted across it, and it just sort of makes it feel like, you know, there's something moving. There's a lot of just weird sounds in the background. One of the levels has this constant sort of like, and again, like when you hear the little sisters, the big sisters in the distance coming for you. There's a lot of like really cool, creepy, atmospheric moments. Also, they seem to have slightly modified this. It was a bit weird, the sound when you replenished your plasmids, like your Eve, in the first game, but they've really amped it up in the second one, and it just makes this, like, the first few times I heard it, I assumed there was some new enemy that had just snuck up on me, because it's like this, like, it's extended and it's needless and disgusting, and I like it.
You like it.
Well, you should give System Shock a go. I don't know if you can play that on the Switch.
I've had this thing recently of wanting to kind of get hold of a lot of old like first person games from around that era that are just, you know, where they did push the boat out a little bit and tried, like, the first Deus Ex game, and stuff like that, like System Shock. I just think of, like, games that I never really got around to playing that just have this little cult fan base because they were so interesting at the time and are still kind of got something about them.
System Shock was terrifying when I played it. It's more survival horror than BioShock. You're definitely not tooled up like you are in those games. Like you're scraping by.
Yeah.
And I spent, you know, most of the time you're just using like a wrench or a pipe, and I spent like so much of that game just like hiding in like a cupboard, and I could hear all these noises, so I could hear sort of zombie things all like screeching and moving about, and I was just like absolutely terrified. Yeah, possible candidate for the Retro Games Book Club.
Could be.
Oh yeah, that'd be a great idea.
Yeah. Well, that was BioShock and its superior sequel.
Thanks, Ewan. You can come again.
Cheers.
All right, guys.
Yes, Dave.
Have you heard that there is a Shenmue anime?
Yes, I have.
Why didn't you tell me?
I'm sorry, I haven't watched it. I mean, I don't really watch anime.
Oh,
but,
I know.
I was very tempted by this one.
How, like, the people who listen to this podcast, I'm going to say, like, shame on you that I am only finding out about this now.
Well, it's my fault.
Not you. Like, you're one person. Yeah, I thought someone might have written in to say, hey, guys, you know that game that you're always talking about?
This is basically a Shenmue podcast.
Before I ask this question, have you watched it now, Dave?
Yes.
Ah, bugger. I was going to say, we could have had a watch party or
a
something.
A watch party?
Yeah. You know, one of those things that people do.
I don't.
On the internet.
We could stream our reactions.
Yeah, live stream.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, is that where we're going wrong? Not enough reaction videos?
We're not doing any reaction. We need more top tens, no. More reaction videos.
You know, it'd be good. I'd do videos of me reacting to my own podcast.
Oh, that'd be quite good, yeah.
Dave, why don't you do reaction videos to my editing skills? Maybe that'd do.
Reactions to old episodes?
Yes.
Or reactions to episodes of the podcast from before I was on it, so that I could be really scathing about it. Right, anyway, Shenmue, anime, I have watched it and I am here to talk about it now because it will be, I thought it might be of interest to you guys. I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm not going to spoil any of the story for you, Chris.
Oh, what?
But it does cover the first and second games. So Shenmue 1 and 2 over a course of 13 episodes, I think it is.
So I don't really know how you stretch out the dramatic tension of Shenmue 1.
Okay. Well, here's the thing, you would think, but to me, I felt it was cracking on at a real fast pace.
Yeah.
I mean, this was my first like impression of it. Ryo was at, he was at Heartbeat's bar, like, you know, before you know it, he was there.
Oh wow.
Asking
does he
for
find any sailors.
What does he sales? Say? Where do the guys I can't remember. Oh, I should have written it down. It's like, where do the guys who work in the port hang out or something like that?
Did they avoid it?
Oh, can't believe
it. He does kind of say it, but it's not an exact reproduction of what goes on in the game. And I think if that's what you're hoping for, you're going to be disappointed.
I want a whole episode of him buying capsule toys.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the thing. I just wanted like one episode, just one where nothing really happened.
Yeah.
And he just like
went to work and
stacked boxes.
He has fruitless conversation with gormless children.
I mean, there's a tiny little bit of when he's in Hong Kong where he does a little bit of going about the streets talking to people. So that is the only real reference to it. They do make a big thing of him like learning martial arts techniques from various people. That is there because that's a big part of their take on this story, is about Kung Fu and what it means and spiritual sense.
About.
Yeah.
That is the under like lying thing through the whole of the Shenmue games though, isn't it? It's all just about why is Ryo seeking revenge when his martial arts training basically tells him that's a bad thing.
Yeah. So that's the line that they definitely take. Which is fine, but he gets on the bus, but you don't see him like buy a ticket.
Well, what? That's the best bit of
exactly.
him on the bus.
He never looks at his watch. He never just stops for like in the middle of what he's doing to go and just get a can of coffee from a vending machine and spend a quiet 60 seconds just having a refreshing drink. that never happens. So, I mean, you know, you got to just moderate your expectations. That doesn't mean it's bad because it is quite enjoyable. There's a lot of things that they do quite well. Like they make on the sort of Shenmue 1, there's quite a lot of Yokosuka, the sort of the main town. Again, not so much of like, what was it, Sakuragaoka, the little villagey section where his house is.
Oh, yeah.
That's the nice bit. They don't, you know, they're more about the sort of famous city or, well, famous-ish. And like Kowloon, they definitely do a good job of depicting the sort of standard depiction of 1980s Kowloon with the fronts of all the buildings. And it's, you know, it's not central Hong Kong. It's the more sort of run-down section of it.
Does it still have Aberdeen?
Yeah, he lands at Aberdeen.
Yeah, excellent. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I mean, it follows the story pretty closely. It's condensed, obviously. Not everything that happens in the games happens in the anime, but it's pretty much the same.
Does he ride forklifts?
Yeah, I mean, he does. He gets a job, and that's quite a big part of the game, but you don't see him at work, but you see all the stuff that happens afterwards and all the various fights that take place in the...
Does he race the forklifts, though?
No.
He doesn't?
No.
Damn it, I was really hoping that they would, like... Because racing forklifts must be the most boring race in the world, in reality.
Yeah.
And I was just hoping they would have jazzed it up.
See, that's what I wanted, and it's just not there. And he doesn't... What is it you guys always say? He doesn't put it all on Chow, or what?
I'll put it on Chow.
At no point does he ever put it all on Chow.
Probably not allowed to depict that amount of gambling on TV these days. He was a heavy gambler.
I was going to ask something. See how he's in Kowloon? Is he... Because I haven't played all of Shenmue 2. I've only really played the beginning of it. So is he actually meant to be in the walled city, the hidden city in Kowloon? Do you know? Because it kind of, in the anime, that's kind of look, and that's kind of what it looks like it's meant to be. Because he's in these dark, dark corridors that are like underground and going up and down stairwells. And
but that's the second half of Shenmue 2. That's like the very last part of it. Essentially, he's in there. Yeah.
Yeah. because they mentioned Dragon Street, which I think was meant to be there. I just wondered. It covers the whole thing, like right to the very end of Shenmue 2, as in like the thing with the goat. I only know this because I had to look it up to check to see how much of the story they covered. And as far as I can see, it's right, you know, the full thing, right to the sort of very last moments of the game. That's when the anime ends as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I mean, if you're wondering whether you should watch the dubbed version or the Japanese version, because obviously I tested this, and I was initially listening to the Japanese version, and I was like, I want to hear Ryo as I remember him. And if you listen to the English version, it is the guy they've got to do Ryo, he kind of conveys some of his unique manner. Slight disinterest.
Why are you walking about? Just
He has. I don't know if it's intentional or not, but there is a bit of that. But all the other English voice acting is done by the same 20 people that do the localization for all anime. So it's horrible. Yeah. Like just those same voices that you hear on every dubbed anime, and it really gives it that Saturday morning cartoon feel.
Yeah,
which it doesn't need because it already is really kind of a Saturday morning cartoon type anime. So having, I would stick with the Japanese soundtrack, which I believe includes some of the original voice actors from the game.
All right, cool.
Not that I could remember, but yeah. That's the one, that would be the one to go for. But I think I did enjoy it. It's kind of an exciting romp, possibly for a younger audience, I would say.
Is this from trying to introduce it to a younger audience so that they'll buy Shenmue 3?
Maybe, I don't know.
Get hold of a Dreamcast.
I did feel like I was, it was fun, but I felt like I was kind of watching like a kid's
cross-legged on the floor show. Eating your bowl of cereal.
Yeah, maybe that's what I should have done. Just watched it in the mornings on Saturday, and just one episode, and then after that, like some really shite program that would come on, like like Landward.
Give us a clue.
Or like repeats of Emmerdale Farm. Yeah, so it's good. The music's good. They have the... Well, I know what you're going to ask, but they do have the Shenmue theme.
Do, 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 do,
yes. Do, do, that plays a lot. And that, I mean, they get good value from that. It's a good tune, and it's nice
excellent.
To hear it.
Yeah, it's good.
It doesn't have the tomato store, it's which is, I assume, what you were going to ask next.
What about Dandy Old Man?
Yeah.
I want to hear
Hip-de-hop.
Oh,
it's
Tom Sands in it, yes. Oh, I only in it for two episodes.
You need Tom Sands.
But it's good to hear him in the Japanese as well, because you get his or their take on a foreigner speaking Japanese.
Oh, I can totally imagine what that sounds like.
And they do a good job of it. He's good. He should be in it more.
Does he fly off on a plane and does Ryo just stare at it as it goes past?
And the poor, whatever the girl, the poor flower shop girl,
who's
like, you know, clearly likes Ryo and he's just completely oblivious.
Yes.
Like, even gets, they get that picture taken together and then he's like, right.
Is he just totally straight faced?
Yeah. And then he's like, well, I'm going to Hong Kong now. Bye.
Bye. Where is it available? Is this a Netflix thing? Is this a...
I believe it's Adult Swim are involved in some way with the development of it. I think it's a partnership with maybe Crunchyroll and Adult Swim. It is available on Crunchyroll, I believe.
Okay.
But I don't know much more beyond
that. Yeah, it is on Crunchyroll.
I don't know if they're going to do Shenmue 3. I don't think they will.
Oh, man. I can't
like it just that. Ends. It ends with the story. The anime ends with the story, and the story continues, or something, just on the screen.
Yeah, episode of Shenmue 3.
Yeah. I was watching Video Game Donkey's Shenmue 3
video, and he was talking. There's a bit I've not played Shenmue 3, but I think it's like he was doing the bits. It just cut to a clip of him getting one of the capsule toys, and it's a toy of that girl from the first game, who's like, yeah, his sort of girlfriend or whatever. And he's like, huh? What's this? He said, it's your girlfriend, you.
Top quality entertainment.
Good. I'm glad. I might actually watch it now.
I might have to check it out.
Nice way to pass your Saturday morning.
I'll get the Cocoa Pops out.
That's it. Episode 131. Another rung in our ascent to glory. Now, since the time of recording our bit about the Shenmue anime series, I have since discovered that a second series was indeed in the works, and it has now been cancelled. And that seems pretty fitting for Shenmue, I think. Perhaps we'll see it in 20 years' time. Next episode should cover Returnal and something else, but don't hold me to that, we do live in uncertain times. We are on social media, Twitter, assuming that's still a thing at the time you're hearing this, Facebook, Bebo, etc, etc, all the jokes, where we are at UNNC Gaming, that's UNNC Gaming. We have a Discord, go to discord.me/UNNC Gaming if you would like an invite. Okay, thanks for listening, see you soon, bye!
I found a 1986 edutainment game called Math Rabbit.
Am I going to have to compile these and wank about them on a YouTube channel for 10 minutes?
Please do. I'm not going to stop you.
Welcome to What Rabbit Gaming!